close, yeah.
Anyway.
Good evening. I'd like to call the Planning Commission meeting Tuesday, March 15, 2016 to order. Could I please get a roll call?
Commissioner King?
Here.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Here.
Commissioner Mack?
Here.
Commissioner Martin?
Here.
Chair George?
Here. If you please stand and follow Commissioner Mack in the flag salute.
Everyone ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And we'll move on to agenda review. Do any commissioners wish to revise the agenda tonight?
No.
No. Seeing none, we'll move on to community comments. This one, we invite members of the public to speak on items not on tonight's agenda. Do we have any members of the audience that'd like to speak tonight? No? Hearing none, I'll close the community comments period and move to written communications. I don't believe we've received any new written communications.
There's none this evening.
Then we'll move right into the consent agenda. Agenda item 7A, approval of minutes.
I move that we approve as written.
Second.
Can you get a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Chair George?
Abstain. And we'll move on to public hearing agenda item 8A, consideration of appeal to Planning Commission case number 16-001, the architectural review 15-012 and minor exception 15-008, revised plans for two mixed-use buildings. The location is Paulding Circle, East Village Plaza. The applicants are DeBlau Builders and the appellant is Diller Ryan. If we could please get a staff report.
Sure. Thank you, Chair George, members of the Commission. The project site consists of lots 8 and 9 of East Village Plaza, which is located on the east side of the village area adjacent to Arroyo Grande Creek. East Village Plaza was originally created with a lot line adjustment in 2000, followed by a planned unit development then in 2002. The overall site is zoned village mixed use, is 2.4 acres in size, and approved for development of a total of 10 lots. Currently, all the lots have been developed except lots 1, 2, 8, and 9. And this slide just shows what the original conceptual plan looked like for the planned unit development. And then this slide illustrates the allowed mix of uses and provides parking calculations for different scenarios, whether a particular lot has a commercial development or a mix of residential and commercial. Each lot, therefore, has flexibility on what mix of uses can be established there. Because this was done 14 years ago, the parking standards have changed and don't exactly reflect what is required today. One of the provisions of the PUD is that each lot must be evaluated for consistency with the approved conceptual plans. Deviations from the PUD standards require either a conditional use permit for substantial modifications or an architectural review permit for minor changes. A change in use that isn't either retail, office, or residential automatically requires a conditional use permit. In 2005, plans were submitted and approved for a craftsman-style buildings on lots 8 and 9. Proposed on lot 8 was a two-story mixed-use building with 688 square feet of office space and a residential two-car garage on the first floor, and then a two-bedroom residence on the second floor. The floor plans for lot 9 were basically the same, except they're just a little bit more square footage. These plans were not pursued, and the property owner instead submitted revised plans, which are the subject of tonight's appeal. So similar to the previous submittal, the current plans are for a mixed-use project with a Craftsman architecture, but with a third story that adds more residential living space and overall square footage. The two buildings are attached to the property line and have identical floor plans. And this table shows the difference between the original PUD conceptual plan and what is currently being proposed. Lot 8 has 136 square feet less of commercial space, office space, and about 1,600 square feet more of residential area. And then Lot 9 has roughly 700 square feet less commercial space and also about 1,600 square feet more of residential area. Two residences are located on the second and third floors of each lot above the office space for a total of four units. The proposed minor exception is to deviate 3 feet, or 10%, from the maximum building height. The development code allows a maximum height of 30 feet or three stories, whichever is less. A maximum of 36 feet is allowable through the minor use permit process. The applicant is requesting to go up to 33 feet in height, and that's in order to maintain the proper roof pitch for the Craftsman style. The site is also constrained by its proximity to the creek and the required 25-foot creek setback, which creates a narrow building envelope and limits the development potential of the site. This slide shows cross-sections of the project standing in Paulding Circle and basically facing east. Because lots 8 and 9 are located downslope from East Branch Street, and because the future construction of lots 1 and 2 will step up from Paulding Circle to East Branch Street and are approved for tall structures with tower elements, the visual impacts of the structures on lots 8 and 9 are diminished. I should note that the previous submittal also was constrained by an existing public utility easement for the sewer line. The applicant is separately pursuing an encroachment permit to relocate the easement and sewer line further back to allow more room for development. The building is still outside the creek setback area per development code requirements. Regarding parking, the proposed development provides four additional spaces above what the development code requires for these two lots. Given that neither garages or carports are required for residential uses within mixed-use projects, all the spaces can be open and shared. In 2002, parking for the residential units had to be either covered or in a garage. Although the parking arrangement appears complicated, and based on the different lots sharing the parking with other lots, the overall site is adequately parked per development code requirements. Including the development of lots 1, 2, 8, and 9, the code requires 79 parking spaces, which is the exact number of spaces provided. Therefore, there is no need to calculate a parking reduction based on a mixed-use development and offset hours of operation, although a 20% reduction for this is allowable per the code. As conditioned, the garage on Lot 4 must remain open for shared parking within the development, adding more shared parking than what was originally provided. The garage was previously closed at all times for the flower shop and wasn't even used for parking. Therefore, more of the shared parking was taken up instead for that particular use when it was there. Per the existing parking agreements, handicap parking is shared with the adjacent lots, in this particular for lots 8 and 9. The project also meets development code standards for lot coverage, floor area ratio, and setbacks. The Architectural Review Committee considered this project last December and recommended approval as submitted with the condition that the alder trees be replaced with drought-tolerant species, and they recommended that coast live oak trees be planted out there next to the creek area. In closing, denying the appeal will allow the project to move forward, thereby providing additional housing units consistent with the city's housing element and additional commercial space consistent with the city's economic development element. It also furthers the overall completion of a mixed-use center that has been incomplete for over a decade. This, in turn, will help promote investment and occupation within the village area, creating a more vibrant environment. Allowing the 3-foot height increase allows the structures to maintain the proper roof pitch consistent with the craftsman architecture. The development code, as I said, allows 36-foot tall structures in the zoning district with a minor exception, and the applicant is requesting less than that maximum. Finally, the 4 additional parking spaces included with this development and the 2 additional shared spaces from Lot 4 as condition creates an overall better parking condition for East Village Plaza and decreases the demand for street parking. So based on these project advantages and compliance with development code standards, staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution denying the appeal and approve the project subject to the conditions of approval. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Kelly. Do the commissions have any questions for the staff?
I just have one question, and it's not... refresh my memory as to what the height was of the hotel that we just approved. Didn't they have... they had an exception for height, and I don't know.
That wasn't my project. Lisa, do you remember?
What's it? I know they exceeded the 30.
Yeah.
Was it 35?
Yeah, from average grade. I can find out because the plan's in the back, so I'll get that answer for you.
I have a question concerning the covered parking spaces, because in one of the notes here, it says 2 of 7. It's buried deep in this little packet. It does, and maybe this is all just, it says resident parking, 2 covered spaces per unit. But there's something in a mixed use or in the village or something where that's not in the code?
You don't, for mixed use projects, you do not have to have covered parking.
Okay. And then the other thing about this on Lot 4, is this mostly just anecdotal information that Lot 4 and the garage and accessibility
yes.
is really not part of what we're really evaluating or voting on tonight?
No, it's more for background information to provide you an overall picture of what's going on at the site.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Mack, do you have any questions?
If staff can explain a little bit about the commercial use, is that exclusively for the people that live there? Is that their business underneath, or is it a separate identity underneath, or is that a question for the applicant?
No, I mean, I can answer that. It doesn't have to be a live-work situation. It could be either or. It's not restricted to anything. You know, it could be separate.
But the hours of operation for the business would be typically, what, 8 in the morning or 7 a.m. to, like, say, 5 p.m., and then after that, the commercial spaces are available for the residents.
For the residential, yeah. That's usually the idea for the...
And it's not just... my question is, it's not identified as parking only for a certain entity, and then that can wrap around and be joint parking for the residents who live there. Correct?
Hi, Shirky. I have a parking question, since the big map. So you're saying there's 79 spaces required and 79 available, and that's including Lot 5?
That's including all 10 lots.
Okay. Do you know how many parking spots are in Lot 5? I'm sorry. I'm showing 68 spaces are required, not including Lot 3 and Lot 5, and 73 spaces are provided.
On this plan that I have here, it shows 9 spaces. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
So 73 plus 9 is not 79. So I'm trying to figure out the actual number of spaces based on what we're given here and the actual numbers.
So I had, because he only, in his parking study, didn't include the lots that he did not, does not own, I included the parking from the original plan for mixed, for when you have a mixed use, and I compared what that was with his plan, and it looks like the footprint and everything were correct, so that's where I got it from.
Okay, so if we were to take this as one giant parcel, and not split it up into 10, and include Lot 3 and Lot 5, with one giant parcel, there'd be 79 spots required and 79 spots total in here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that is with the new revision of the extra, the two extra floors? Because now we're going
yes.
to three floors.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So there are no extra spots. So 79, we
no.
have the exact number.
Right.
Okay. I'm sorry, how many spots did you say were on Lot 5?
I think I said 9.
9?
This is according to the plan that was provided.
Okay, because I'm showing the plan here, not including Lot 5, is 65, right? If I'm looking at this
yeah,
one
it,
here.
So what I did was I took what he had done and I added what was missing.
Okay.
So there's two spaces that are not included. If you can, on Lot 3, that he didn't count. See that?
Right. So that would be two more. So that would get me to 76. So I'm looking at his 65. If we add the 9 from Lot 5 and the 2 from Lot 3, we'd have 76. So I'm not seeing where the 79 actual spaces are. I just know that parking is a concern, and I just want to make sure that what we're given here and what the numbers are, they actually all line up, because the shared use reduction is crazy to analyze. So I'd rather just not analyze it with the shared portion.
So what I did, you're looking at the actual, so.
I'm looking at the overall site plan that they
65.
Provided.
I have 65 plus 11 plus 3 is 79. I did this right before I ran over here. So I'm assuming my math is correct.
So I think we're doubling up on Lot 3 then, because Lot 3, three of those spaces are already accounted for, so we can only add two more.
Well,
see, and Lot 3 already has 23, 24, 25 on there.
Those three. And, oh, I know why. I know why. Okay.
Not
so there's five. 9. So there's 9 and 5, 2 that weren't counted in 3, that's 11. And then for Lot 4, when I look at this, because I can't tell what's going on by this diagram, so I go to this one, the original, with the very small print, and Lot 4 with a mixed use. Actually, this shows. I can't read this.
I'm going to let Kelly
take a look at parking.
That. And just for your information, the hotel height is 33 feet 4 inches. That was the approved height.
I thought it was around 33. Well, if we can find out from, I'm not clear about Lot 4 now.
Okay.
If we can find out from the applicant, because you know what I'm saying, it's hard to see on this.
Right.
And then this one's confusing. I assumed there were 3 parking spaces on Lot 4. So I have 76 not counting in Lot 4. So if the applicant can tell me how many exactly exist on Lot 4, then we would have add to that.
Okay. Just from what I read in here, Lot 4 couldn't be used for parking because it was being used for other purposes?
Well, Lot 4, it would provide you with two in the garage, so that would give you two, so that would be 78. There's four spaces? You said there's four spaces on Lot 4.
Four spaces on Lot 4 that are usable spaces?
So that gives actually 80 spaces. That's 80 spaces physically and 79 required.
Okay. I'm sorry, I don't remember where, but somewhere I read in here that we weren't using any of the parking from Lot 4.
That's where the confusion comes in, because it talks about what's shared with who and who can't use
right.
what, and.
Right.
So that's why I really appreciated your question about, what is, take it all as a whole, mm-hmm. what's there and what's required, so.
Okay. So when the applicant comes up, I'll ask about the four spaces on Lot 4 then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Juan, just to let you know, there's a spreadsheet here and Lot 4. This is exactly what the parking is and what's being provided mm-hmm. and how they're sharing a handicap stall and et cetera.
Right. It's just the shared parking was what was confusing me. If you look at the reason I didn't want to go with the shared is if you look at the number of spaces required, there's six, and it's saying the spaces provided are three, but if you look at the notes, none of those six include any of the spaces that are actually on Lot 4. See, three are shared with 8 and 9, two are shared with 3, one is shared with 3, one handicap is shared. So all six from the shared take up those spaces required, so there were no spaces provided.
And it says three spaces on lots 8 and 9 per parking agreement.
Right, so those spaces are on lots 8 and 9, right? So my whole thing is I just want to know if we're doubling up or if we're actually getting enough parking spaces total. Sorry, I didn't mean to be long-winded. Those are my only questions.
Okay.
I'd like to invite the appellant up.
Me?
Mm-hmm.
My name is Dylan Ryan.
Good evening, sir.
I own the property across the street, Lot 3. My problem with this, I don't know where to start, actually. Big picture or details, but the first thing I got to say is the request was for a minor adjustment of 3 feet, but the plans clearly state the roof height will be 34 and a half feet. So, just details, but apparently you can go 36. In any case, I even think 30 is too much for that particular location. But who am I to fight City Hall and a big developer? I do have a lot of concerns, though, because as we can see right here tonight, there's a lot of confusion over exactly what's going on. My own lot, I should say maybe this is an indication of your dear staff is sincerely overworked, because there's all these details and they just don't have time to put everything down in one place. My own lot suffers from some of these problems with details. It was never properly, I don't think, inspected or finished, even though it was finished before I bought it. So let me just get right to what I want. Fat chance, I really don't think three stories is appropriate here, but again, who am I to fight with the big people? However, there is a severe problem with parking and the increased parking requirements generated from those three stories. At the very least, I think you have to put down in writing black and white exactly what the parking requirements are. For instance, number 4 has been a source of problems in the past, because it was 4 of its spaces were converted to storage, retail actually, and warehouse without, I don't think, taking into account the requirements for doing that, especially the construction permit on the conversion. So I think you have to include that in this, because on one of the parking plans I received very recently, Lot 4's parking was shared with this new development. And I just don't know how that can possibly work out. So I think that's the one thing you really have to put down, black and white, exactly how the parking is going to work. And dare I use the word, you have to look at it holistically. The whole as a, all the details as part of the whole. One little detail I still haven't quite figured out, I believe, on page 5 of your, I don't know what to call it, packet, special conditions, it mentions shared parking on lot 4. That doesn't make sense to me. Lot 4, right now, has one parking place of 6 garage units, of 6 spaces and 3 garage units. I don't know what they're talking about. I have, on my lot, 6 spaces, which, interestingly enough, was originally planned in the conceptual plans for 11 spaces. It was reduced to 9 with a conditional use permit or something, but I only have 6 and one handicap. Anyway, so I have 6 spaces and one handicap, and that one handicap is shared. I don't know what your special condition 6 is talking about. So, in conclusion, I would like to see the parking situation cleared up and written down precisely in black and white. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. You could stay up here in case the commissioners have any questions for you.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Do the commissioners have any questions for the appellant?
None for me.
I do. Specifically in your appeal, you're addressing the appeal based on the height issue. Can you be clear with the commission and what your concerns are with allowing the exception?
Well, basically, it comes down to the details. They requested 33 feet, and the plans called for 34 and a half. Minor detail. But the big picture is 3 stories is just too big for this area. That's my opinion.
So basically, it's more of an opinion of whether it's too tall or too big. It's not blocking any view or obstructing or...
Well, it definitely is blocking view. It'll be creating a canyon there. Yeah. I didn't buy a view, but it will be affecting conditions, living conditions, by creating a canyon there. Although the biggest thing, of course, is back to the parking and the density of use. That's really the problem with the third story and the increased floor space.
Okay.
Thank you. I have no questions. If you could invite the applicant up.
Good evening, Commissioners. Dwayne DeBlau, DeBlau Builders. I just wanted to say I brought Mike Peachy, our architect, and he can address questions for the structure and the design. I can give you a little history. You know, it's been 13, 14 years since we were originally advised by planning at the city to go ahead with a conceptual plan for the whole properties, and that was a wise choice, we felt. So we went ahead proceeded, and we have basically a plan. We've retained 8 of the lots. 2 of the lots we sold off that had existing structures. So we have worked very hard on parking for the lots that we control. Once we let go of those 2 lots that are out of our control, both of those lots went back to the city for approvals on their own terms, on their own parking terms. So we're not prepared to solve those problems on those lots. If they have shortages of parking, we were not involved. We regrettably were not stepping up and paying attention to what the process was. But we've worked very hard to accommodate as much parking as possible. And for our personal reasons, it's because business needs parking for our spaces. That's our main reason. And then I want to explain a little bit about this parking study. That study was created to justify the taking of four spaces that were below Lot 4, that were enclosed as garages. They were done without our, there was an occupant that went in there for some wedding services and some flower cutting. They didn't, it was not authorized, but we, I think the city worked with them some. I mean, it was a recession. I think the tenant was struggling. And right now, the space is empty as far as parking. So what that's, this study focuses specifically on the 8 lots held by DeBlau Properties and shows that with the old municipal code and the current municipal code that it meets the requirements, even excluding those 4 parking stalls under Lot 4, under the building. So we have an additional 4 that are not in the calculations. And some of the confusion, it was a difficult task, and it's complex to figure out parking and shared use. But you'll see that there are 73 spaces provided, and there are 68 spaces shown as a required amount. When you look at the exhibit, you see just 65 spaces that are on there. Well, the additional 3 are because there are shared uses for handicap. So when you have a handicap space that's a shared use, where those are being counted as a parking space. So that's why you have a discrepancy between 65 on the exhibit and you have a 68 on the other, on the actual tally. And those are my comments. If you have any other questions, I can try to help you answer those.
Mr. Sure King, do you have questions for the applicant?
Yeah, would you explain the how that 34-6 came into play? I know it was a typo, but it seems to be part of the argument here.
It was a typo on the front sheet of the ARC submittal, and then when the actual cross-sections are shown, the 33 feet, the accurate 33 feet, is shown on this, on later pages in the package. So it was not corrected.
So the architectural review actually okayed the 33 feet. That was their motion.
Yes.
Thank you.
Commissioner Mack, do you have any questions for the applicant?
Can you share any information about the parking? Is there a reciprocal parking agreement amongst all the property owners that allows them to park in spaces that are not necessarily on the lot that they're coming to?
There are no reciprocal parking agreements other than there is an existing one between lots 3, the appellants, and lot 4 for those, the handicap space that is shared. And there are 2 spaces that are, have been granted to that lot, lot 4, as their own exclusive use. That was all done several years ago, prior to the appellant acquiring the property and so forth. And at the time that that was done, it was a much smaller project that was being proposed there. And as builders, we built a whole parking lot there on both sides of the property. We built the handicap ramp, and then we made a deal with the previous owner, who didn't have a need, he said, for those spaces. Those were granted as an easement for lot 4. So that's where the projects were going at that time. There was going to be a carpet store at the time. There was going to be a proposed small warehouse, and then the existing structure. And this is going back, 10 years ago. But that's the history on that, for the parking on that site. So.
And what lots are currently under your control right now? Or which ones do you currently have control of versus that have been sold off?
Lots 3 and 5 have been sold off out of the 10.
No other questions?
I was looking through here and trying to figure out, since the appeal was basically based on the height restriction, and I was looking back for his letter and can't find it right now, but did he express concerns in that appeal letter about the parking, or was it just on the height?
It was about the minor exception and the architectural review.
Okay. And so it did include the parking then, huh?
There wasn't much detail in the...
Yeah, because it was my understanding, if you don't indicate it in your appeal letter, then you only have specific items. But the question I have for you is, and I'm looking on this, the only place I can see what the contours are is on the landscape plan, and they're not clearly identified. But what's the pad elevation for lots, you know, the two that you're developing versus the ones that are going to be in front of it, which is, I'm going to turn back to the page, five and, okay, the pad elevations for 8 and 9 versus the ones for the already developed 3 and proposed 2.
I may have to get back to you on that.
I'm just wondering if, you know, the difference, because you said that this side over here is going to, or the 2 and 1 and 2 are going to have a raised elevation there. So aren't they going to, when, by the time you do infill there and raise that, aren't you going to be at an equal height as what's on the other side for 8 and 9?
The pad elevations on lots 1 and 2, the intent is to stay the same for those pad elevations. Since the general, there's a general slope through the project, you know, pad lots 1 and lots 2 will be a little bit different, maybe 12 inches or so. Lots 8 and 9 also have a differential in their pad elevations because you obviously have to have a level slab. So that shows up on some of those documents that you'll see there, if that answers your question.
Well, I think the only one that...
Kelly, you had a slide that showed it.
The overall site plan that is too small to read. With
Mr. Fowler-Payne, if you look at the slide up there that shows them...
The top diagram is what you'd be looking at.
Well, I guess what the point I'm getting is, by the time you build the ones in the front, if they're up higher, they're going to be at the same level as the ones on 8 and 9.
It's actually higher if you look at the top one.
You know, I can't really see the definition on that. But it didn't seem like the 3 feet was going to make that much difference in the height versus the ones in the front. It's not like they're going to tower over the view corridor from East Branch Street.
I think Section A shows that clearly, if you wanted to pull that up, Section A on top.
She can't see it.
So it's kind of... Well, to me, it doesn't seem like the 3 feet is a significant amount to worry about in the exception on the height. And I didn't read in his response for the appeal about, you know, unless it's in the architectural review, that he had a problem for parking, although we always have a problem with parking. It would be nice to have more. And that's all I have to say. I just was curious what the difference in the elevation was, like pad elevation. None of this is going to show that. I couldn't find it.
Commissioner Martin?
Yeah, my questions are kind of along that same line, and I guess more for me for my education. Do you know the height of the building that's on lot 7 and how that might compare with the finished construction? And I'm willing to take a guesstimate, but, is that currently like 24 feet or 25 feet high as a two-story building, or... I'm just kind of curious how much taller, you know, the profile of this building is going to be compared to what's already there.
Good evening, commissioners. I wasn't prepared to speak to 7, but I could speak to the rest of the buildings where we...
May I get your name for the record?
Mike Peachy, MW Architects. I've been involved with this project for over 10 years, and we've On lot six, we got a height exception to a similar height of 33 feet. I think it might have been 34 feet. Lot seven, we didn't go for an exception, so I'm sure it's probably under 30, maybe. We've got some nice architectural features that get close to 30 feet with the tower. Lot 10, I think we were under, but we're still reaching that height because we wanted to get height in the commercial component. So what's unique to this project is that not only did we get exceptions for those lots that I mentioned, we also got a height exception on lot four, which I believe that was 34 feet, 3 inches on the backside. And then lots one and two, there's a lot of history with lots one and two because the original design received a lot of pushback from city council, and they did not like how the project approached the public side of the street. So we spent a lot of time trying to get the public plaza to be entered at the sidewalk level, whereas the original design showed it up as a deck. You had to walk up a stair up to a plaza, and it was too separated from the street. There was comments that they wanted to see an extension of the village to come down this far, so there was a lot of effort into trying to implement a lot of those design features. So some of those features included an exception to the elevator and some of the architectural features. So we've taken a great care in trying to not only address the 30-foot height limit, but we found that the height limit really hampers some of the architecture when it comes to the village. Is a lot of what's unique about the village properties is the slope of the roofs. And we tried to take that third story as not a true three stories, and we tried to introduce the third story inside the roof, which is done quite a bit in a lot of the village style houses, that steep roofs. The third story is within that roof, so we've set back the square footage to try to enhance and complement the architecture. We actually did a solar study showing what effects a 30-foot building would have on the adjacent property. And with the current design, we actually reduced the impact of the shadowing by 7 feet. So I brought that if you're interested in looking at that. But we've actually enhanced his solar exposure by changing the way we designed the third story. So I appreciate any questions that you have. But I can help answer anything that you have. Thank you.
What is the height, the ceiling height of the second floor for units 8 and 9?
Ceiling height as far as the residence?
Yes.
It would be 8 foot. And then the top floor would be volume. And where the staff report said 3 and 4, which is not a slope that we typically note. It was more 8 and 12, which is pretty common. A lot of times you see 12 and 12 in this style, village style architecture.
Thank you. Do you have any other questions for the applicant?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Ryan, could I ask you one question, please? If you come up to the podium. Good evening again. On your lot, the 7 spaces that you have, the 2 that are parallel with your building, are those currently being used as parking spots?
Well, actually, very few of my parking spaces are being used because I very seldom drive. My residential tenant is working out of town. And they're not being used right now, but they have been used.
Okay, so having them be shared isn't a huge issue then, since they're not being
used? Well,
not
at this moment.
Okay.
But it very soon will be, because my tenant's going to be moving. I would like to comment on one thing I just heard. I heard that the previous owner gave exclusive rights to parking spaces. Those were the terms used, and I just can't believe that happened. For one thing, I went up to, when I first bought this building, I went up to the county, and I asked about this, any easements and all, and I happened to be working with Julie Rodewald, and she could not find an easement. However, she did say that not all easements are recorded publicly, for whatever that's worth. However, the bottom line is, how could any spaces have been given away, because I only have 7 for the development. I mean, 7 and 1 shared handicap. That makes sense that 2 of them could have been given away, leaving me with 4 spaces, basically.
So are you saying you don't have a parking agreement?
I do not believe
not
so.
Not possess a parking agreement.
Julie Rodewald couldn't find one, and I don't believe it would be valid if it existed in the first place, because I need a certain amount of space, even for if it was a carpet shop. Although I think this was built, it was originally designed as a carpet shop, but it was approved and built as a mixed-use commercial residential without the carpet.
Thank you, sir.
Does the current development have a homeowners association or HOAs that easement would be called out in those?
There's not an HOA. There's only a common private driveway agreement.
Just a driveway, but didn't include parking, huh?
Correct. Okay. We are probably a little behind on getting documentation for our shared parking agreements with the properties that are all co-owned. Once those lots that were sold off were taken away, we lost control over those, and both of those projects actually went through an approval process for their structures that are on there.
So the parking agreement that we're reading here, that was part of your parking study, you don't actually have a copy of that parking agreement?
I can provide the parking agreement and the easement documents for the shared use for between lots 3 and 4 for the handicap space, and I can also show you the documents for the spaces that were granted as an easement for the for lot 4.
Okay, so you do have that documentation.
Yes.
Okay, does staff have that documentation?
It may be scanned, or it might be in a box underneath the Women's Center.
Thank you. Do you have any other questions for the applicant? No? Thank you, sir.
Well, just, you know, clearly though, but even with these documents, those documents had not been recorded at some point?
They were recorded, so I'm not sure what the appellant is, what his experience was up there, but we do have the recorded documents.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
If the commission doesn't have any more comments, we'll open it up to the public. Do we have anyone who wishes to speak on this item? Hearing none, I'll close the community comments and move it back to the commission. Commissioner Mack, do you have any comments on this item?
Well, we're kind of embarking on an existing approval for a project, number one. I just want to make that known. And now what's coming back before us are individual designs as these lots develop. And times do change. And for whatever reason, the applicant is making it denser and going up another level, which I can understand. Things are becoming more valuable in space, and maybe as a client that needs more room or whatnot. My comment is basically this. I'm coming back to Section A and looking at the overall height and looking at the architecture and design character of it. And can the applicant make it under the height requirement? Absolutely. He can change the roof pitch to 5 and 12 or 4 and 12. It would totally comply. Would it be in architectural keeping with the downtown village core? No. I think for me, I can find justification for the applicant coming in with the architecture and the third story and fitting in with the village character. To me, I think it's an appropriate solution, and I don't see any views being blocked. I'm looking across the street up the hill. I think we can make the basis and find grounds why to grant the exception for the 3 feet going over, especially with this architectural character and being unique in village downtown core. I cannot see why we're going back and revisiting the parking. I see that the applicant has come in and added four more spaces. We have a true mixed-use commercial. It's vertical. We don't have residential on one side of a lot and commercial on the other side of the lot. This is a true mixed-use commercial. When the commercial use goes away, there's going to be 50, 60 spots available for the residential use. I really don't see what the issue is regarding the appeal. It hasn't been made clear to me, and that's my comment.
Thank you, Commissioner Meth. Vice Chair Keene?
We're here tonight to either approve or reject an appeal that is questioning the height of the buildings. And all this other discussion doesn't have much to do with what we're here to do. The architectural review approved the 33 feet, and my investigation of the documents we have here, I think the 33 feet is appropriate. So therefore, I would move forward to deny the appeal.
Mr. Martin?
I agree with what my fellow commissioners have said, and I think that the 3 foot variance is reasonable, and from what I even learned tonight, is really consistent with some of the other buildings that have already been there and already been approved. So I don't have any other comments.
I have no problem with the 3 feet exception in the height, none at all.
The reason I spent so much time on the parking is I know that that was a concern of the applicant and of the appellant, and when someone spends the time to make an appeal, I just want them to know that we thoroughly researched everything, which is why I was so, I asked so many questions about the parking. I didn't want to make the appellant feel like he wasn't heard. That being said, I agree that the architecture warrants the extra height. The fact that the units are in the back of the development offsets the extra height a little bit in my eyes. I'm ready to move forward and grant the exception and deny the appeal.
Mr. Chairman, I move we adopt a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rio Grande denying the appeal 16001 of the Community Development Director's decision to approve the architectural review 15012 and minor exception 15008, location Paulding Circle East Plaza, applicant DeVille Builders, applicant Diller Ryan.
I second.
We have a motion and a second. Could we get a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Keene?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
And Chair George?
Yes. And the motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Diller. I appreciate your time. That closes our public hearings, and we'll move on to non-public hearing items. The consideration of staff project 16-002, the interpretation of sign ordinance regarding sponsorship banner. not intended to be viewed by the general public. The location is Soto Sports Complex, and the applicant is the City of Aurora Grande. Could we please get a staff report?
Good evening, Chair George, members of the Commission. One moment while I situate myself after the shuffle. So as you mentioned, this is staff project 16-002. It's a municipal code interpretation, a development code interpretation regarding the sponsorship banners being placed without in areas not intended to be viewed by the general public. So a little bit of background about the project or the request. The sign ordinance was last modified in 2011. The specific section of the sign ordinance was regarding temporary signage. The intent of this ordinance was threefold. One, to create an ordinance that was more clear when it came to temporary signage, creating a business-friendly atmosphere, but also maintaining an attractive business environment, so allowing temporary signs but not proliferation of temporary signs, as well as an ordinance that was more feasible to enforce. A lot of municipal code violations under the previous ordinance went unenforced due to staff shortages. Overall, staff views that the revisions to the sign ordinance have been rather successful. We get a lot of compliance from businesses in the city. However, recently we've had an inquiry from the Recreation Services Department regarding the sponsorship banners and how the municipal code lines up with that topic. So current banner regulations are one banner per site, not to exceed 24 square feet. The banners are required to be printed on vinyl or plastic, as well as being firmly attached to a building and not displayed for more than 30 days in any 90-day period. That last requirement was so that we didn't have businesses using now open signs forever. But again, this has created an interesting request from the Recreation Services Department. Essentially, what they are proposing is to actually sell spaces on the around the basin sports fields at Soto Sports Complex that would allow local businesses an opportunity to essentially sponsor the banner being placed there, and they would have what would likely be their business advertising message, particularly in these three locations. Down along the walkway between the ball fields, along the rear fence line facing into the baseball field, and then along this line as well, facing into the ball fields. One thing to note, in talking to the Recreation Services, what they did not want to propose is putting banners in front of this area, as they find that a lot of more senior sports enthusiasts tend to park their cars there and watch grandchildren play sports, and they didn't want to block that viewing experience and make them get out of the car if they wanted to stay in the car out of the wind. So the reason that this has kind of come up is a result of the municipal code, and specifically municipal code section 1660.050 talks about exempt signs. Subsection K talks specifically about miscellaneous signs. K1 in particular says, interior signs completely within a building when not visible or readable or intended to be read from off-site or outside the building or structure are exempt from regulation. Additionally, combining this with K15, which says city-sponsored civic signs for community entrance, identification, direction, or information are also exempt from regulation. So in this instance, looking back at the request for the code interpretation, we're looking at obviously a city-sponsored event being the sporting events, where that message on these banners is not intended to be viewed by the general public. It's intended to purely be viewed by people there participating in those sporting events. And so it kind of creates this gray area that staff didn't feel comfortable making an interpretation on their own. So therefore, we're bringing that in front of you tonight. And with that, it's recommended that the Planning Commission review the sign ordinance and provide an interpretation regarding the placement of sponsorship banners at the Soto Sports Complex. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Matt. I have a question. What is the difference between city-sponsored and local organizations?
Uh,
Can you give me an example?
So Arroyo Grande City sponsors a sporting event versus the Five Cities Softball League.
In that instance,
The reason I ask is I know that the local organizations sell banners as part of their fundraising. So if we allow the city to sell banner space and the space is sold and taken, then that takes away from the local organizations able to fundraise and sell sponsorship banners for their season.
Depending on, go ahead.
I would think just for the purposes of this discussion, we're going to focus on the fact that there are temporary banners on a city facility, and there wouldn't be, you know, there'll be some decisions made by the, you know, recreation office in terms of who gets what banner and what organizations. But for the purpose of this tonight's discussion, I would suggest focusing on the fact that there are going to be temporary banners up around that whole perimeter, and if that could be found to be substantially similar to something that would be allowed under these sections of the code. And I'll add that over the years we've brought interpretations to the Planning Commission, not very often, once a year or so probably as an average, and maybe some years ago there was a several in a row. We keep them in a binder, interpretations and those resolutions separate, because once in a while we find something like this that just doesn't fit nice and neatly into the code. And the idea is to see what is allowed in the code and see if there's some kind of comparison you can make as a commission to see if it's substantially similar to what would be allowed.
Okay. I wasn't sure, because they had this, the city had brought it up, so I wasn't sure if that was something they had been wanting to do and were unable to do so. Okay. Vice Chair King?
Would you go back to the coal complex? If we approve this, how do we exclude this and this? And the ones outfields of all those things. I can't see how we can approve this and just call it out, make an interpretation for just one area. I can see how we can say the Soto complex, and that would eliminate the other ball fields and the other parks around. But to take just this one, I'm a little confused how our interpretation can only be limited to this rectangle.
Absolutely. So, this image is up there just for visualization purposes only. This is what the Recreation Services Department is proposing. Obviously, the code interpretation would be everywhere. So would this interpretation, being that it could, in any instance where the sign's not being read by the general public, so forth and so on, yes, you're absolutely right, that could lead to proliferation in that regard. But and that's kind of the question is, was the ordinance written and intended to prohibit the signage not intended for the public as a whole, or is it allowed in instances such as this, in any instance such as this?
I'm just concerned about how we can approve a little section like that in an interpretation, and theoretically, as much as I don't know exactly how to do this interpretation yet, but if these are more ideal spots probably than that, because where the people sit and those in the ball fields. But I don't want to get to the position where this interpretation would extend to our neighborhood parks. That's a real concern I have, is how we can make this interpretation yet limit it to a specific area.
And you've highlighted one of staff's concerns and one of the reasons that we brought this forward to you tonight.
this ordinance says it's for the Soto Sports Complex. So are we interpreting only for the Soto Sports Complex?
So the proposal that's in front of you is specific to the Soto Sports Complex, but again, the interpretation would be carried citywide.
Commissioner Martin, do you have any questions?
I do have a couple of questions. Are all seven of these fields included in the to be part and parcel of the Soto Sports Complex, even though access to them are divergent?
Yes, they are.
I do believe it is pertinent to discuss these city-owned banners versus, you know, these local youth organization banners. It's been a few years since I've been down there, but I spent a lot of time and officiated a lot of youth athletic events on those fields over the years. Typically, I know specifically for softball, and I don't know what their current experience is, but these sponsoring businesses or whatever, the team, typically the team parent of some kind would come and pin up the banner at the beginning of the game and take the banner down at the end of the game. So these banners are truly temporary. There were some that were identified as this is an official ball field for Five Cities Girls Softball that didn't have any other specific, you know, business sponsorship or something. It was more of an identification type of banner as indicated, you know, on your item 15, K-15. I think it'd be consistent with that. But my question really is on these baseball diamonds, are there currently sponsor banners that hang on the outfield much like they do at the high school? I mean, I haven't been on those fields in a long time, but...
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay. So at this point, there are no real banners or temporary banners or sponsor banners or a banner that business A paid X number of dollars in order to get the rights to be on the fence, no matter where it might be within that Soto complex.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. I guess another question I have is, why not create K-16? It seems to me that just for, you know, to add a couple of lines onto this, rather than have us look at an interpretation that of an interior banner that is not suited to be viewed from someone outside a building, we're now, you know, rather than create a 16 that's saying, you know, at Soto Sports Complex, there are a number of outside fences that are visible from the ball fields themselves and are appropriate locations for, you know, sponsored banners, rather than for us to take this, in my mind, kind of this giant leap that a banner behind, you know, home plate at Ikeda Field is now interpreted as inside a building. It would seem to me that there's no reason, there's enough detail in what's going on here that K-16 could be created, you know, to allow this. I don't have a problem with sponsored banners. And so, you know, from the overall request, I think that's a reasonable request, and I think the clarification is appropriate. I'm concerned that we're being asked to interpret inside a building as inside a fence at Soto rather than just adding an additional kind of rule that talks about, you know, at the Soto Sports Complex, there are opportunities for, you know, sponsored banners to exist. And I won't even get into managing or maintaining the cost and the duration and the condition and maintenance and all of those things that come along as soon as we allow banners to be hung on an outside fence. Thank you.
I'll just note that, yes, it would certainly, now that we have the request, be prudent to modify the code to make that clarification, and this interpretation probably could help us do that if it was, you know, so directed. We do have a draft... very draft sign ordinance update that we are preparing. We've held off on that due to some court cases that have been churning through that will have significant ramifications on the code we bring forward to you, but it will be some time before we can polish that up and bring it to you. So in the meantime, we brought this interpretation before you.
Well, it is in my request to create a K-16 more of a change that is typically allowed under this kind of situation and is more appropriate for us to be looking at an interpretation of the existing code? Is that the direction we're going here?
I would say certainly we can take your direction as to formulating or allowing this this, when we'd have to obviously bring to you some alternatives for crafting it. It's not unusual. We can certainly place that in the code, but it will just take some time to get it to you. And I think there's just a request by the recreation director and the entities that would benefit from the placement of these signs sooner, for example, this summer, that they are requesting this interpretation go forward now, and perhaps a legitimate, correct fix in the that could be codified after your review, you know, in the fall, winter, when we bring that back.
Commissioner Fowler Payne, do you have any questions?
None. I have none.
Commissioner Mack?
No? I have no questions, just comments.
I guess what I was going to do was a comment, too.
Then I will close the question period and take it to comments. There's no one in the public to ask, so. Commissioner Mack, do you want to go first?
Sure, why not? I'll take a stab at it. To me, it's more of a definition of what's public and what's not public. I think K1 clearly, to me, is self-explanatory. I mean, we can revisit maybe adding some language to it. But it says, states that interior signs are exempt from regulation when completely within a building or not visible or readable from the intended to be read from the off-site or outside of the building or structure. I can take that interpretation and by code, you know, the backstop is a structure. I'd have to get a permit for it. I would have to show structural calculations and so forth and so on. But here's the deal. Every one of those fields are surrounded by a fence. So for me, it's the issue is, which way is this banner showing? Is it facing towards the inside of the field, or is it facing the opposite direction towards the public way in Ash Street? Is it readable from Ash Street? That's really what we're talking about. That's the public in my mind. We can argue whether the public is the public that's coming to enjoy the sports event or whether it's the car traveling down Ash Street and can't even read the advertisement. In my mind, you're not going to read any banner that's posted where that red is, let alone in any one of the ball fields, especially if it's facing the interior of the field. And if we want to add a K16, I don't see what help it's going to be, but if we wanted to further define building and structure and maybe add to it outdoor use such as amphitheater or sports fields, we can further define the uses here. But I think it's totally appropriate for advertisement and for the city to put up these types of things. And I totally understand, you know, I coached many, many years of softball. Four daughters. I've coached and I've been there. And it is. We bring our own banners and we bring our own things and we have our own people supporting our groups and everything. But we bring those banners, but we shouldn't subject the people from bringing those banners to cover up these banners during a particular game or a softball event or something like that. I wouldn't want to see that happen where, oh, you're covering this other advertisement. I see the conflict here is, well, where do I hang my banner if every square inch is taken up? So I think that's a valid issue to address. But in terms of the reasonableness, I think it fits within the definition of K1. And that's my comment.
Vice Chair Keene?
The banners and advertisement I see at most sports fields aren't on the structure at the, you know, at the diamond. They're out here where people sitting around can see them. So, to the structure thing is I don't think that's where they're going to go. But I understand what you're talking about, and even if we say that they can't be seen from Ash Street, that actually, you know, how far in do we go? What do we do here? That's really my concern. And I know that we cannot say what these signs are going to look like or what they have on them, but the Parks and Rec Commission can. And I think that we need to instruct them that we have some concerns and we want really kid-appropriate signs, beer and wine bars, you know, all the things. I'm not saying that that could happen, but I think that they need to set up a set of parameters of what they really want and what they want the city to approve. And so I'm wondering if before we, I don't know how we can instruct them, but we need to say that we need to have that we're concerned about them setting a policy on what kind of advertisements are appropriate. I don't really have a problem with this. I just see some problems that could arise, and I'd like to, if we're going to change the ordinance, we need to have pretty much everything addressed that we're concerned about. If it was just a direction, that would be one thing, but you know, if we interpret the ordinance, and so that's basically the direction I'm going in.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Having just come from a softball game before this hearing, I don't see a problem with having them facing Ash Street. I mean, when you get into that complex, if you don't have some kind of signage out there, you do not know which field your kids or your grandkids are playing in. So having the signage only on the field that they're playing doesn't really help, I want to say, the general public, the grandparents, aunts, uncles, or whatever. I mean, you're wandering all over that complex looking for, if you don't know your kid's uniform color, I mean, you're wandering everywhere. Unless you're going to have some kind of a kiosk out there that says the name of the team, and it gets changed every time, which is a pain, and saying which field it's on. So you have those signs that are just on the interior portion of that field. That team already knows who's sponsoring them. It's on the back of their shirt, so they don't really need it on those back fields. I think having them out in the front is probably in the general public's best interest. And I've walked those fields many times.
Commissioner Martin?
Yeah, those fields get a lot of use. And I know there's a lot of adult, you know, co-ed and softball that's played there. There's soccer that's played there. There's youth football that's played there on various fields. There may be a couple that are fairly exclusive for baseball. My boy didn't play baseball, so I just know about all these other sports that are going on up there. First thing, I support the effort to update the ordinance, assigned ordinance. I think this is appropriate. I think it's appropriate to acknowledge that these are appropriate locations or potential locations for businesses. And they're assuming there is some interest. The only comment that I want to make is, I think the five of us sitting up here, and I'm certainly not trying to specifically exclude staff in my reaction, but I think that the five of us sitting up here are take this responsibility seriously in this kind of review and evaluation, and frankly, I'm disappointed that no one from Parks and Rec is here to support their request, and as well as some of the impacted, you know, sports organizations. And I'm not sure how to take that lack of attendance. I don't know if they were just assuming that, you know, well, staff knows what they're doing and staff will do this and this is a slam dunk. I think it's a good decision. I think it's a good change. I don't have an issue or a problem with it. I think it's just disappointing that there's not more interest from the community to step out and support and help us get clarification on the motivation for that change and the need, you know, for this change. I'm only assuming that there are businesses that are willing to pay a fee to have a business banner installed at a location along that, along one or more of those fences. And I support, you know, the efforts tonight and the changes as proposed. I just, I guess I'm disheartened that there's not more public input and participation. Thank you.
So, excuse me. So if I were looking at K1 and I had to make an interpretation tonight, I would recommend that we just add the word or. So K1 states that interior signs are exempt from regulation when completely within a building or when not visible or readable or intended to be read from off-site or outside of the building or structure. And for me, a fence could be considered a structure. And that being said, it's a sports complex. It's not uncommon for people to see business banners inside fences of sports complexes. So I really don't think that that would be a huge issue. Again, for me, the issue is not the interpretation of this, but that if we interpret it in a manner that is going to be detrimental to our local sports organizations, that is my number one concern, because that is their how they raise money to pay for their uniforms. And so I would agree with Vice Chair Keene, take it back to Parks and Rec and maybe have them, if this is going to move forward and they're planning on selling banners so that they can bring in revenue, to really take into account that it may have a negative impact on our local sports organizations. Those are my comments.
I kind of agree with Commissioner Martin. I wish they'd have been there, because one of the questions I've got, they're going to sell advertisement, and nine times out of ten, the company that is going to buy one of those signs is already donating. Now, does that mean that they're going to put up the sign and not donate, or are they going to double up? You know, I think that it may not be as fair as the money situation may be compounded.
So I'm not really sure how to move forward with a recommendation for staff at this point.
To be sure, there's going to be management of the programs that would allow the banners to be placed by the Recreation Department. The question that was asked of us, and we're asking you, is can they, within code, be placed? So I'm certain that if the answer is yes, the interpretation can be made. Certainly opportunity to clarify a little bit more later when we bring back the code. But if the answer is yes, then the programmatic part of that will go back to Parks and Rec.
Are you designing a specific resolution? Because the resolution as it is proposed here basically says that these sponsorship banners will be consistent with an exempt signage, and it also limits it to the Soto Field. Now, obviously, there's enforcement issues and things that I don't think we're prepared to really address tonight, but this resolution limits it to the Soto Sports Complex and makes it consistent with the exempt signage, which I think sounds to me is fairly consistent with what I'm hearing being said up here. Is a resolution the preferable method of going forward?
Yes, and that will just help us document that interpretation over time. We can go back and refer to it as needed.
That I move that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution of the City of Rio Grande interpreting that the display of sponsorship banners on interior fencing at the Soto Sports Complex is consistent with exempt signage provisions of Section 16.60.050 of Chapter 16.60 of Title 16 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Can we get a vote, please?
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Keene?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
And Chair George?
Yes. And we'll move on to agenda item 9B, election of officers.
The Thank you, and it is that time of year for you to elect a chair and vice chair to serve for this next year going forward, starting in the first meeting in April. And so there's a protocol outlined for you if you so choose. But with that, I'll bring it back to the chair to run the election.
And I'll open the nominations up for chair.
I nominate Commissioner George as chairman.
We have a nomination for myself as chairman. Is there another nomination? Okay, I'll close the nominations and open to a vote. Do we need a roll call vote, or can we just, how do you want to do it? Roll call vote, maybe?
Either way, you can roll call.
Okay.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
And the nomination carries, and we'll move on to the nominations for a vice chair. And I'll nominate John Keane. Do we have any other nominations? No? Seeing none, I'll close the nominations and take it to a vote.
Chair George?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
And Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Okay. And then we will move to notice of administrative decisions. I don't think we have any, do we? No. Okay. And commission communications? Do we have any commission communications? None. And staff communications?
None this evening.
Okay. Then
I just have a comment. Is there something moving forward from ARC? I'm not scheduled until April, so not knowing if there's been something in the last 2 weeks that's been at ARC or HRC, if somebody attended.
Yes, there was two items on the last ARC agenda. One of them was a new single-family residence on Short Street. The other was the a preliminary look at the design guidelines for the East Cherry Avenue project. I think that's what we're calling it now. Specific plan project. And then the next meeting, we have tentatively three items scheduled, and those agendas are available on the city's website.
Okay. I move we adjourn.
Hold on a second.
Sorry.
Just one comment. We had a public meeting here regarding the Bridge Street project, and it was open to the public on a Monday morning. And actually, I was disappointed that not more of the public had shown up, and just want to make an opportunity. If there's another date scheduled for the next workshop, that we can let the public know about that and on this broadcast and let them know that they're invited. It was a fantastic update from our consultant and where we are in the process and the options that we are running through, and it's coming along terrific. We're actually going down the path of two options and bringing them before and getting the funding improved in case one gets tanked so the second one can move forward. But in any case, the detail work on the bridge is outstanding by the consultant. And I want to give an opportunity to let people know about the next workshop.
Yeah, we do not have another one scheduled at this time. We'll be bringing probably another one forward when we're about to put out the environmental documents. And so I'll notify you and the public as we get closer to that. We did send out a lot of postcards and posted it, but perhaps when it gets closer to picking the alternative, we'll generate some public interest again for the community meetings. Thank you.
You have comments? No?
How is that? Yeah, I just have one. How's the reconstruction of the swinging bridge coming along? What's the current status on that?
The maintenance project for the swinging bridge has been coming along nicely. We have to reorder some fencing for the railing, so it will take another couple weeks. And we are having that looked at by a bridge consultant. We have a separate capital improvement project for that swinging bridge to look at the abutments on the south side, and we're getting that evaluation done as well. So that consultant will also evaluate the maintenance project as well and make sure that the bridge can be opened safely for the public, and our goal is before Strawberry Festival.
Thank you.
Okay, I move we adjourn.
Second.
Jeff?